Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
I'm with you, bro. Let's do it.
We are with one another in person. Apologies for the delay in episodes, believers, but I've been traveling over the last week, so we've not gotten a chance to record a Lucha Lowdown. So we're going to be covering two episodes this week. We're going to be covering A Phoenix to a Flame and Fade to Black, which is the latest episode of Lucha Underground. But this is a dose of dose, as Guapo Jeff Budd likes to say. So, we got two episodes to review here for you, as I am now in San Diego with El Guapo Jeff Budd. We are here for San Diego Comic-Con, as we try and do every year. Jeff makes it every year. I try and make it every year. First night of the con was tonight. We went to Lucha Libre Taco Shop. How was Lucha Libre again this year, Jeff?
It was amazing, as always. I was suckered in the ring, though, and I felt betrayed. As you became a rudo, you did a heel turn on me.
We reenacted one of the scenes from A Phoenix to a Flame, actually, in Lucha Libre Taco Shop. And by the way, believers, if you find yourself in San Diego, please check out Lucha Libre Taco Shop. It's consistently just one of the best dining experiences I have. We always reserve the champion's ring, which I highly recommend you do. You get access to the old school ring announcer microphone that you can use with reckless abandon. You can wear luchador masks. You get to do all these things. And it's such a cool experience. And tonight was no different. But now we're going to get down to business. We're going to actually talk about these episodes of Lucha Underground that we have to go through with you as the Cueto Cup continues on. Round two of the Cueto Cup. So A Phoenix to a Flame. We got three Cueto Cup matches. We had Jeremiah Crane and Taya, Mil Muertes and Paul London, Phoenix and Marty the Moth Martinez. We kicked off Phoenix to a Flame with Taya versus Jeremiah Crane. What did you think overall about this, and who did you have in this?
Well, first off, I didn't even have Taya in the match, so I had Jeremiah Crane versus Joey Ryan, but I did have Jeremiah Crane poised to win this match, so as far as who I predicted to win this match, still made it into it. I enjoyed the match. There were a couple of parts that I thought got really fierce. I especially liked it when Taya sort of turned the tables by countering when she was stuck in the corner and stuck her foot out to get Crane in the crotch. And that's when she sort of came a little more on the offensive. So that's the part of the match I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, she sort of hulked up at that point, which was cool. And I'm a big fan of both of these luchadors. I did have Taya moving on, and I, like you, had Jeremiah Crane pulling through. I enjoyed this, like we've talked about before. I think I enjoy Jeremiah Crane more and more each week. I love that cannonball run he does outside the ring, and he did do this to Taya. So I enjoyed this match. Crane did prevail, so our bracket isn't any more busted there as it has been in sort of a state of disarray. But something else that came with this match was Sexy Star's involvement. And Jeff, how do you feel about that? Because Sexy Star showed up to distract Taya, didn't lead to the immediate finish. Taya would lose, and then Sexy Star entered the ring and used those same brass knuckles that were entered into her match that got her disqualified on Taya. What did you make of all this? Because I thought you actually had some interesting points before when she got DQ'd from the tournament and about this match and afterward.
I just don't think it's been a good look for Sexy Star in the past 2 weeks. I mean, she's the one who chose to use the brass knuckles. It's not like Taya forced her to be disqualified, or like you were wondering if PJ Black was going to fake being injured by the brass knuckles and then having the ref mistakenly DQ her. And then as far as like with Taya, it's like if you didn't know the characters or know the story and were just tuning in, Sexy Star looked like she was the aggressor, and she looked like the heel, just the way she was dressed and looked. And Taya was in a very vulnerable position. And yeah, this isn't the Sexy Star that I've been rooting for and that I've grown accustomed to. It was strange. It's this slight twist that we're starting to see, sort of like with Puma.
Yeah, and I thought that was a very interesting point that she is showing an edge now too. And I agree with you. It was not your typical babyface behavior. I mean, she was attacking a heel and everything like that, but she kind of did it to herself. She went away from, she didn't dance with the one that brought her, so to speak, in terms of how she acts and stuff like that. So I wonder if that's what they're going for here, or if it's just, I really don't know. But I do think that's interesting. It was very heel of her what she did. It wasn't like upstanding paladin Sexy Star kind of deal.
It's not lawful good.
No, it was not at all. From there, though, we get to what I think will be both of ours, This Is Why I Love Lucha moment of this episode, and that is one of the best vignettes that they have done in a while. It is Phoenix, and he's working out in the gym, and Aerostar shows up, and they're having a conversation about Drago, which pleased me because it means that Phoenix is still involved in the Drago saga and everything with the Reptile Tribe, and just playing off the fact that Aerostar is a time traveler, that, you know, because Phoenix is, as he is, a man of a thousand lives, coming off as the optimist, you know, saying that, you know, Drago will find his way through, and Aerostar is not so sure because of all the things that he's seen. And, you know, he's saying that he's, much like Melissa Santos, is putting all of his money on Phoenix to win the Cueto Cup now that he's out. And Phoenix with the very good, is it really fair that a time traveler, you know, be gambling on a tournament? What did you think about this whole thing, Jeff?
Well, like you, first and foremost, it's important that they solidify that Phoenix is still a part of that storyline. And it's not that Aerostar is just going to have to pick things up off on his own when helping Drago. And then, yeah, the dialogue was amazing. I love that they continue to focus on the fact that Aerostar is a time traveler, Phoenix being the optimist because he is immortal. And yeah, I really enjoy their relationship. I like the two of them as friends. It was a great trios team. I thought they worked really well together, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, it's just good that Phoenix is still, you know, having his two cents on that. And as we get into the second episode that we're going to talk about tonight, that will play a bigger role, a bigger one than I expected as well. But that is certainly was my favorite moment of this episode, was that vignette. It was so good. And the reaction I saw online on Twitter, everybody had pretty much the same reaction. They were loving it. The Aerostar, Phoenix, and When Drago Is Good, their sort of relationship is all very cool. So like that a lot. From there, we got to Paul London versus Mil Muertes. Neither of us had Paul London in this match. We both had Mil Muertes, and we both had Mil Muertes moving on.
Yeah, and then also, exactly. I was going to say he was going against Vibora, and I thought that was going to be a, you know, Clash of the Titans sort of a match. Although, I like Paul London, and I enjoyed this match a lot. And I'll never underestimate him again, because I thought he really brought it to Mil Muertes, and it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, this was an incredibly strong showing for Paul London, and it played off well about the Rabbit Tribe, but it didn't rely on so many Rabbit Tribe shenanigans. Like, he was holding his own very much so in this match. I mean, again, there's the heavy drug use references and stuff like that. I did like, there's a moment in this where Mil Muertes was kicking Paul London's ass, and he still had sort of a faraway look and a smile on his face, and Matt Stryker saying he's almost like astral projecting to like be in a better place than where he was at. But yeah, no, Paul London, and yeah, again, really brought it in this. It was a very good match. There was the moment where Paul London hit the two shooting stars, thought he got the three count, and then that was pretty much all she wrote, because then Mil Muertes took control. Mil Muertes does move on, as we had him doing so in both of our brackets. I really enjoyed Paul London. I think he's a good single star and good in the trios with the Rabbit Tribe. My favorite part of this match, though, was Paul London getting the lick of death, and the look on his face was tremendous. Just, again, that sort of same astral projection smile, which I would have on my face if that happened to me, and also the crowd chanting "Lucky Bastard," which was just great. Mil Muertes moving on, as he's the unstoppable force right now in the Cueto Cup. And then that took us to our next vignette, which was the beautiful Brenda and Tejano in a bar sharing a drink of whiskey. Brenda said she was tipsy after one, but so this is, and that she gets honest when she gets tipsy and tells Tejano that he's boring, which pisses off Tejano. I mean, what guy wouldn't? I actually have a friend that was told that he was boring by a girl that he was seeing, and he did not react well to it, which I agree with him on. It's not a good thing to say to a dude. But what did you think of this vignette? And then we had Famous B, who was straight creeping in the background. But what did you think of this whole thing?
Well, because Famous B is the puppet master, and he's pulling the strings, and that's how you recruit Tejano, is you do it through the beautiful Brenda. That's the only one that he ever reacted positively to. He was never buying anything that Famous B was selling, but it looks like their hooks are firmly in Tejano now, and I think that's really going to be shown in next week's episode, next time we see Tejano. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I hope, I don't know, I'm kind of hoping that he just joins Famous B.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm hoping that's how he's his client. I mean, if they have to do it with the beautiful Brenda kind of being the carrot, you know, for him, that's fine. But, yeah, I like the idea of Famous B having several different clients that are all pretty top tier.
where the hell is Dr. Wagner Jr.?
He's not in the tournament.
We haven't seen him for quite a while. I just love that visual of Famous B sort of roping Tejano and just reeling him in. That was excellent. That took us to the main event for a Phoenix to the Flame, and that is Phoenix versus Marty the Moth Martinez, who was accompanied by Mariposa. Marty the Moth showing up with a lunchbox in the ring and was trying to feed Melissa Santos some of the sandwich when she was announcing Phoenix. What did you think about Marty bringing his lunch to work?
Marty's a sweet boy, and he was eating his sandwich, and he thought that maybe Melissa would want some of it, too. It's a tasty sandwich, according to Marty, and he was just sharing and being nice. None of it's working, and he doesn't know what else to do. He's at his wit's end here.
It was one of the great moments in Melissa Santos' ring announcing, just because, like, she looked about as, like, perturbed and pissed off by Marty as she ever has with his antics. And she also cut off part of her entrance for Phoenix, essentially. Like, she was mid announcing Phoenix, got the sandwich shoved in her mouth, and then just finished saying, just Phoenix, and then got out of the ring. What did you think about the match before getting into the aftermath?
Oh boy, it's hard to think of the match without thinking of the aftermath. What I liked is just sort of the way these two match up. Phoenix with his speed and agility. Marty is just a lot of solid strength. And I think you see that a lot in the match. There were a couple times when he sort of threw Phoenix around and overpowered him a bit. But then Phoenix is used to facing guys like that, so it really wasn't that much of a challenge.
And Marty's just such a good character, so he can play off such a just a great baby face like Phoenix so well. So I really enjoyed that quite a bit. And just that, again, Phoenix, I mean, if they want to give the baton to that guy, it would be totally well received by the believers and everybody watching Lucha Underground. Love Phoenix. And we both had this matchup in our bracket, and we both had Phoenix moving on, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And that is, in fact, what happened. After a very good match, Phoenix did defeat Marty the Moth. But this is where Lucha Underground, this is where I think the other favorite moment, other than the Aerostar and Phoenix vignette, this was one of the most unsettling but really well-executed closing moments of Lucha Underground they've ever done, is that Marty the Moth, after losing, lays out Phoenix with the Aztec Pride lunchbox, which I really hope Lucha Underground starts selling, because I would definitely get one. But he lays out Phoenix with the lunchbox. He gets a fork, and he'd been ripping Phoenix's mask during the match, and then he starts stabbing Phoenix with the fork, drawing blood through shades of Abdullah the Butcher, while Mariposa is holding on to Melissa Santos, making her watch the whole thing while she's screaming. What did you think about all this aftermath?
Well, then not only that, Mariposa was holding Melissa because Melissa had prevented Mariposa from giving her the lunchbox in the first place I think that was still during the match. Yeah. She was stopping them from cheating so that Phoenix could actually prevail. It was great. It was a great visual as far as what we've kind of been building up to. I mean, the Moths are such a creepy villain, so it really lends itself well with somebody who's as great and true as a Phoenix, and then Melissa Santos being roped into the entire situation too for her feelings for Phoenix, and also how Marty feels about her. The whole thing is just crazy, and it was really intense at the end. I loved it.
Yeah, it was very dark, and it was just, again, kudos to Phoenix, Marty, Mariposa, and Melissa in particular. I feel like that Marty and Melissa, I felt like, really sold this the best, with Melissa just screaming for Marty to stop, and Marty just, like, saying, I love you, and I'm doing this for you, and all that's just really creepy stuff. But it, again, just like you said, so intense. It came off really well, as far as just it was like the end of a horror, or not the end, but it was like a crescendo in a horror film. It was really, really rough to watch, but I'm glad they did. It was very cool. Before we get into the second episode, which was this week's episode, Fade to Black, I just want to thank all you believers for listening. Apologies once again for the delay on the episode and any difference in the audio quality tonight, as we are on location here in San Diego. I'm not in my usual studio recording this, so we're doing it mobile style, handheld style. But thanks for listening. Appreciate you all. The response has been so very good. Follow us on Twitter at Lucha Lowdown. I love live tweeting the episodes with you and everything like that. That's one of the very fun things I like to do with you believers, and the response and just the interaction is always so great. Be sure to subscribe to us and rate and review us on iTunes. If you like what you hear, the best thing you can do is just give us a nice review. That helps get the word out about us, and tell your friends. We know the wrestling community is a very tight-knit one. one, so we appreciate you doing that as well. iTunes, Audio Boom, Twitter, at Lucha Lowdown. If you want to email us, it's luchalowdown@gmail.com. I love interacting with all of you. And now on with the rest of the show, which is Fade to Black, which the second round of the Cueto Cup is continuing with Pindar versus Cage, Dante Fox versus Son of Havoc, and Prince Puma versus PJ Black. And some of this is the aftermath of our bracket, which just got shot to hell towards the end of the first round. We start with a vignette right off the bat, though, that I don't know if it's yours, but it's, I think, my Why I Love Lucha moment, which is Prince Puma sort of having some PTSD flashbacks to losing Grave Consequences against Mil Muertes, seeing Conan getting put in the coffin and everything like that. Vampiro shows up on the roof and, you know, basically tells him the only thing that's going to make those voices go away is winning a championship. And that was awesome. But the part that really sold it for me is then Puma's looking on. He sees Worldwide Underground showing up in the temple. And PJ Black looks up, sort of takes stock of who he's looking at, and then just sort of like backs up a couple steps and just shoots him the bird, which was just, it was great. What did you think of how this started?
I love the Worldwide Underground. And they just seemed like they were all having such a great time as they were walking into the building. And PJ Black's attitude is just phenomenal. We forgot that PJ was even fighting Prince Puma tonight, and so we just thought that was PJ Black's reaction to Prince Puma no matter what, which would have been fine either way. I thought it was great.
I actually think I would prefer it if that was just his natural reaction to seeing Prince Puma. It's just...
Well, Puma's no friend of theirs, so it makes sense. I mean, they've had to go against him in the past.
Yeah, they would have no love for Prince Puma. I think my favorite part about it is that he looks up, you can sort of see him assessing who it is, and then it's just like, boom, there it is. F you. I'm going to get you later, which was great. But we start the in-ring action with Cage versus Pindar. Cobra Moon, of course, accompanying Pindar. Cage this time, which I think is something that we've talked about quite a bit, refusing to take off the gauntlet, which I like. The referee did not like that, was trying to get Cage to take it off, and there was really no match. Cage pushed the ref out of the way, threw him to the ground, and hit Pindar while still wearing the gauntlet, was going to start the beatdown. Ref called for the bell and DQ'd Cage. Cage out of the Cueto Cup via disqualification. What did you think about just everything going on with this?
I like the idea that the gauntlet is becoming more connected to Cage, and it's harder and harder for him to remove it from himself. I was bummed to see Cage get DQ'd. But then at the same time, this was going to be a weird match because we barely know Pindar, and it would have been strange to have Pindar sort of like beaten down, and then at the same time, you don't want to see Cage struggling while he's got the power of this powerful Aztec god at his disposal. So I think this is probably the only appropriate way to do it. My whole thing I was saying to you in the living room was, Dario doesn't like DQs in his tournaments. Dario gave the gauntlet to Cage. It's like, dude, your boss gave me this. I'm supposed to be able to use it. Just get out of the way. Let us have our match. Let us have some bloodshed for the crowd.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. And to the sort of the point as far as this is sort of a weird match. You don't want to see Pindar get beaten down. Also, you can't have Cage lose while wearing that gauntlet in this tournament.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just the best of the situation is it's the right moment in the tournament. He didn't get eliminated in the first round. It's and time is passing, so he is becoming more attached to this gauntlet. The referee, you know, it's not Marty Elias, so maybe he's not the, you know, senior official, so maybe he didn't know that maybe this thing will be allowed as Lucha Underground continues. I don't know, but I thought it was the smart way to write Cage out of the tournament.
But then also, like we've been talking about, something has to be done about the gauntlet so that Cage can actually do wrestling maneuvers in the ring, because it's hard for him to get a grip on things. Like, he was having trouble holding on to the ref to slam him in the first place, and that's going to get really dangerous if they do have actual matches.
Well, yeah, and I was thinking about that too, is that maybe Cage is going to become, for a little while, more of a vignette character on Lucha Underground for a period of time, much like Katrina is, as this gauntlet storyline advances, because it's not going to take anything away from him, because I mean the gauntlet thing is going to be a focal point for Lucha Underground, so he, you know, gets to rest his body up too, because I mean he was dealing with an injury, so maybe he's just going to be more vignettes. I don't know, but I thought it was the smart way to write him out. I did not have that, however, in my bracket. We both had Cage moving on in this match, and so that's a problem. So, yeah, that didn't work out too well for us there. And now we get to Son of Havoc versus Dante Fox, who we didn't have either one of those guys in this match. We had El Dragon Azteca and Son of Madness in this.
I didn't even have Son of Madness. I had 3 question marks.
Well, who turned out to be Son of Madness? I had a feeling that's who it was going to be. Well, I didn't know the name, but I just had a feeling it was going to be that that doppelganger. But yeah, so Son of Havoc versus Dante Fox. What did you think of this match?
No, it kind of reminded me of Dante Fox's other match. It was somebody else that, you know, I never really thought of Dante Fox pairing up with, and I thought what we got was gold. This has been a great tournament for Dante Fox. It's been a real showcase of his talents. This was a fun match, and I mean, I already was a huge fan of Son of Havoc, so it was really good to see these two guys just kind of get to do the best against one another, because it was very well done.
Yeah, I thought this match was incredible. There was a sequence in this match that you got to go back and watch more than once. Dante Fox feigns that he's going to flip, that he's going to fly out of the ring, flips over the rope, then goes for, like, as you called it, a flash kick, Son of Havoc move. They both land on their feet, and it's this sort of melee dance that they do in this match that was really incredible. So I loved that sequence. That was some of the best in-ring action that we got.
I was going to say, and then that's when Havoc slammed Dante into the fence right after that. That's how that ended.
That's right. Yeah, that was incredibly vicious. But they did some really, really cool stuff in this match. So I thought that was great. Dante Fox eventually caught him in the Foxcatcher. He is moving on. So already a good showing and no sign of Killshot in this.
Well, you know, Killshot's a sniper. He's waiting for his shot. Did we even mention that Son of Madness did make an appearance tonight as well? While Son of Havoc was on his way to the ring, he was ambushed on the stairs by Son of Madness. So those of you who were in the audience with a paid ticket, you're like, wait a minute, that's 2 matches in a row where it looks like we're getting screwed over. But Dario Cueto came out and said, no, we're not postponing this match. Get your ass in the ring, Son of Havoc. This is going on tonight.
Well, yeah, you got to choose. You either forfeit or you get in the ring and fight right now. That's right. And so Son of Madness did continue on that storyline by jumping Son of Havoc. So, you know, and Son of Havoc, of course, missing his vest, rocking the biker club colors. But yeah, so that beatdown in the beginning played a role in this match. So it kept Son of Havoc looking strong because he did show well versus Dante Fox. But Dante has been a real standout in this tournament. Then we get to another vignette tonight. First of all, what we hear is Johnny Mundo talking about, it's like Ghost Dad 2, only no ghosts and no dads, thinking outside the box. Yeah. And we don't know who the hell he's talking to. It's Worldwide Underground, the locker room surrounding somebody, and PJ Black walking there, you know, like, hey, my match is coming up. Why was so important? And they introduce us to their new agent, Benjamin Cook. What did you think about this vignette and Benjamin Cook?
I was kind of like PJ Black at first. I was like, why do we need this representation? And apparently that's a stupid question, and that's what Benjamin would have told me as well. I mean, I guess it's kind of cool. Mundo is the sort of guy that I guess would have some sort of management. Not only is he the champion, but, you know, he's very full of himself, and he's this actor, and he's this larger-than-life superstar. So maybe he should be having somebody handling that stuff. And then Worldwide Underground is so tight-knit that they kind of would have the same management for all of them. So I guess it sort of makes sense. It kind of goes with their motif of, like, you know, these Hollywood bad boys. I guess we'll kind of see where it goes. I kind of like the last vignette of this episode, too. And I guess the guy's good at his job is what we found out.
He reminded me, not just because this guy played a character in the show GLOW, but I don't know, something about him just immediately reminded me of Charlie's creepy uncle from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, maybe amalgamized with Danny DeVito from Death to Smoochie. He's like a crappy Paul Heyman so far from what I've seen.
Dude, Paul, yeah, that's who he reminded me of too. I was like, he's a poor man's Paul Heyman. Which, hey, you know, you could do worse.
That's true. You could be like a very poor man's Paul Heyman, or like a, I don't know, like a poor man's, I don't even know. But so yeah, he's representing Worldwide Underground now, apparently.
It's that or Famous B.
I think I'd take Famous B. You know, Dr. Wagner Jr. has been very successful
in the tournament.
But he's been very, well, that's actually a good point.
Everyone's in the tournament except for like 4 or 5 people.
And a lot of them are hurt.
Famous B was in the tournament.
Where is Dr. Wagner Jr.? That's a good point.
That's a question I have for Famous B.
Yeah, he's put all of his eggs in the Tejano basket now, and he had a perfectly good client, Dr. Wagner Jr., but that's a good point. So Benjamin Cook now representing Worldwide Underground. That leads us directly into PJ Black versus Prince Puma. PJ Black on his own, no Worldwide Underground assistance in this match, which I think is going to maybe because in the vignette, they were talking about, we're going to talk strategy with Benjamin Cook while you go have your match. And I don't know if that's going to lead to some dissension that, hey, nobody was there to help me out against Prince Puma when, you know, we were there to help out other people and stuff like that. So I don't know if this Cook character is going to lead to some falling out with PJ Black. What do you think?
Well, I always wondered if anybody was going to betray the group or at least branch off from the group, I always thought it was going to be PJ Black. I just thought he had that kind of personality and skill set that, you know, set him up for that. I was pleasantly surprised that nobody from the Worldwide Underground interfered because I thought this made it a better match, and PJ Black more than held his own for almost the entire thing. So I was very happy with this. I thought this was a phenomenal match for him. I'm glad it was on his resume. Prince Puma, I mean, just perfection again, as always. So I really enjoyed it.
The point in this match where Matt Stryker talked about Prince Puma being like made of rubber. And I think that's the best, most succinct way to just describe how Puma moves in a wrestling ring. Cause like I've struggled at times to sort of articulate how he's able to sell, how he does, and move, how he does. And it's like, yeah, he is a rubber man. That's what he is. So I don't know. I agree with you. I thought this was a phenomenal match, and both guys showed a lot. There were no shenanigans, straight up match. PJ Black came very close to winning. There was some just tremendous stuff. There was a point where, I don't know, like Puma, like flat footed, just like rolled and leapt into a DDT. And it just, they do some crazy things. And there's a top rope, a reverse Rana, a super Rana, Frankensteiner. I mean, they did some, I didn't realize that PJ Black's, one of his moves called the wellness policy, which I guess is a reference to him. I don't know if Matt Stryker just made that up on the fly, like reference to him, I guess. And maybe he failed the wellness policy one time in his WWE career. I don't really remember off the top of my head, but it was funny to me to hear that term uttered, and that when Puma kicked out at two and he passes, Puma used a 619 in this match. It was a great main event, and we both had Puma advancing in this round. Both of us, I believe, had Sexy Star, though, right?
Correct, yeah.
So Puma's moving on, and that sort of plays off the opening vignette, which is, you know, when Puma said, you know, he's not going to lose whatever it takes. This was a fantastic match. Puma again showing his darker side, rocking the, just wearing the jeans as his ring attire. What did you think of that?
I didn't like it, but Vampiro mentioned that too, talking about how he kind of wanted to see Puma in all black. And he's definitely taken a turn. I mean, he didn't even take his hoodie off in the last match when he was going against Ricky. So, yeah, it's a very different Puma.
Well, we should mention one thing, too, about that opening vignette is it ended with Puma saying that he won't lose my master, which is important. So, thoughts on that?
I'm not a fan of it. I really think, if anything, he should be reaching out to Ray right now. Now, that's a master that you can talk to. He's a great mentor, and he's...
is he, though? I mean, from what we've seen, how's El Dragon's humor's doing? He's a very impetuous youth.
You can't change the fact that he's a young man and he's hungry to help and things like that. El Dragon Azteca Jr. was doing a great job against Dante Fox before he decided to help out Rey.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to probably blame his mentor for that.
Well, you should blame the Worldwide Underground.
No, I agree. I just think Rey, I guess, you know, Rey's like Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds or whatever it is. You know, just trying to help the troubled people, I guess. But, you know, good for Ray. I mean, I love him. He's a legend. But that led... So from that match, Prince Puma eventually defeated PJ Black with... how that sequence to how it ended with one of the most vicious drop kicks I've ever seen from Prince Puma. How did that look to you?
Dude, it looked nasty, man. I mean... It's funny because there were certain parts of the match where Puma seemed sort of like supernatural, where some of PJ Black's stuff, like moves, weren't even working on him. And PJ Black even looked surprised, like, what the hell? I'm throwing everything but the kitchen sink at this guy. And then it got to the point where, yeah, he annihilated PJ Black. PJ Black went flying halfway across the ring.
With like a thud, like a, just like a sack. He just went down. It was, yeah, it was rough to watch. And again, as I mentioned in the Son of Havoc Dante Fox match, where there's a sequence that I just really feel like you'd go back and watch again and appreciate. There's one in here where they're just sort of throwing all these different strikes at one another. And a lot of it's they're no-selling it. And it's almost just like a showcase of the things that they can do. And that was very cool to watch. But yeah, so after Prince Puma, like just dropped PJ with a sick drop kick. He went back to the 630, which I thought that maybe they were going to get away from because he is sort of being more heel Puma, and that was the 1-2-3. I do not have a problem if they're going darker Puma that he's going to start rocking black, but put him in something other than jeans. I don't know. Show up dressed to work. I don't know. The jeans thing doesn't really work for me for Puma.
I mean, it didn't seem that bad to me, but I mean, I'd be fine if he was wearing some sort of wrestling pants as well. But yeah, maybe something just solid black from now on. That's just his new look. That's Puma Dark.
Stryker was talking about, he's like, and he did it all wearing skinny jeans. I was like, damn it.
Yeah, that kind of takes away from the credibility, I suppose. That's not cool.
But another very solid episode. I'm digging the Cueto Cup so far. I think it's very cool. But right from that main event, we get into the Benjamin Cook character doing his job. Dario says he's already gotten 17 phone calls from him, and PJ Black is like, well, the match only ended 5 minutes ago, and he's apparently very good at his job because now Black's going to get a chance to face Rey Mysterio. And now, they didn't sort of, Dario couched it as like, you're going to get a chance to take on the current number one contender. I don't believe this is with the number one contendership on the line, correct?
Wasn't mentioned, and I don't think that's the case. The way I was looking at this is PJ Black is sort of the enforcer of the Worldwide Underground, and so it'll be his job to injure Rey right before his match with Mundo. It actually would be interesting if PJ Black wins the match and then finds out that he's not the number one contender. That would be a really good idea.
Yeah, that would be interesting. So next week, we're continuing on with the second round of the Cueto Cup. It's going to be Tejano taking on the Mac. Who do you have in that, Jeff?
I have Tejano.
I also have Tejano. So
you and I match on this, I think.
Yeah, and then we have Drago taking on Pentagon. I have Pentagon moving on.
As do I.
I hope we're both right there. We'll see how much damage our bracket takes.
Well, I mean, the good thing is our Group C brackets are fixed. Group B got a little wonky, and Group D, I'm just counting on Prince Puma fixing that the next time he fights. But our Group A is solid, and I think it's going to continue that way.
Yeah, I think so, too. And then also, again, added for next week, PJ Black versus Rey Mysterio. That will be very good. We'll see where all this goes on. And we're going to be doing some more Lucha coverage here at Comic-Con. We've already seen some pretty cool stuff. I've gotten some great El Santo swag already. I'm stoked on that. And we're going to be hopefully talking to a few people here like we did last year when we were at Comic-Con. So we'll keep you posted on that. Again, apologies for the delay in the episode, but now you got, as Jeff likes to say, a dose of dose. And we're going to be doing even more, hopefully, as the week rolls on here in San Diego at Comic-Con. That is going to do it for us tonight, however. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.